Hello.
Hi, how
Hello.
You doing? Yeah, can you hear me?
Can you hear me, Jamal?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Joanne?
Are you in Houston?
Yeah, I'm in Houston.
Have you been there since March?
I have. I've been on lockdown for the most part since March.
With your family?
Yeah.
Everybody's healthy, I hope.
Everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
You know, just dealing with well, we were doing homework and working from home and now trying to figure out, you know, what the summer looks like. So
it's all a big question mark, isn't it?
It's a big question mark. Very uncertain.
I'm grateful to you to take some time to speak with me today, Jamal.
You're welcome.
Sorry for the intrusion.
Oh, well, no. No problem.
It seems like New York was years ago.
It does. That's like a whole different world now.
It is. It is. Weren't we lucky we had what we had then?
Yeah.
So, well, I'm doing these interviews, and I definitely wanted to get your voice involved here with this project. So I wanted to just start by asking you, I mean, I know a lot about your work. Obviously, it's been in the collection for a long time, but I want to go back and look at your early years. When and how did art enter your life?
I attribute it to skateboarding back in the late 80s, early 90s, which was like my middle school and high school years. And I think in a way, like, that time period kind of introduced me to visual art, really, right? Now, there's this whole kind of musical side to my family, and they're, like, professional musicians within my family, too. So, like, that's a whole other thing. But I think in regards to visual art, it had to do a lot with skateboarding.
What kind of musicians were in your family?
Gospel musicians.
Aha.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Were they singers as well as instrumentalists?
Singers, instrumentalists, songwriters.
Yeah. Fantastic. Did anybody play the organ?
Nobody played the organ. My uncle plays the piano, and he's a songwriter. My mother was a vocalist. My aunt was a vocalist. Yeah.
So you learned about tone and rhythm and all of that through music, but now it translates in a different way, right?
Yeah.
So was the art of the art on the skateboards that caught your attention?
That, the stickers, right? Graphics within magazines as well. And then I think also like the kind of fashion aspect that went with skateboarding at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of that together, just kind of started to breed that in me, you know.
And were you drawing or were you making any art at that time?
I was drawing mainly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, drawing.
And what were you drawing?
So I started off, so at the time, on skateboards, there was a lot of skulls and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because there's this whole kind of punk rock or hardcore music connection between skateboarding. So I started drawing that, and then I kind of went into a more kind of, there was an artist named Mark Gonzalez, who you might be familiar with, actually.
Say the name again.
Mark Gonzalez.
Okay.
So he kind of started this turn in regards to skateboard graphics. You know, they became slightly more cartoony, a little bit more funky, right? And so I started to draw things like that as well. When I was in, I think this must have been 10th grade, I went on a trip to New York City, and I went to the Pop Shop. So this was probably like 1989. And so, you know, with Keith Haring, there's this whole kind of graffiti thing that went along with that. So that opened me up as well. Eventually got, in high school, by the time I got to 11th grade, I was taking art classes at a arts magnet school here in Houston. And so that really started to open up, you know, my exposure to different painters and artists in art history.
Were you beginning to identify as an artist within yourself at that time?
I was. So by the time I was...
Excuse me. Can I interrupt a minute? I'm hearing a little sound. Are you wearing...
I am wearing headphones. Should I take them off?
Yeah, maybe, because I'm hearing like this scraping sound.
A little
sound.
Buzz?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
It sounded like a scraping sound. That's much better. So you did begin to think of yourself as an artist, like around 11th grade.
Yeah, around the time I was like 16, So 11th grade,
okay.
I began thinking about myself as an artist, mainly a photographer, and I thought that was going to be my future.
Where did that come in, photography?
So my dad worked for Polaroid.
Ah.
And so since I could remember, like, I'd always had exposure to cameras, instant film, and so I was always taking pictures, right? When I got into around 11th grade, I started taking classes with a woman here in Houston named Amy Blakemore, who is she was in the Whitney Biennial 2006, and she's pretty well known. I think mainly kind of regionally, like Texas based, but you know, I think she's had a good career. And she was. Are you familiar with a Diana camera?
No.
So it's basically a plastic lens camera, which is a toy camera. And it would take black and white 120 film, which is medium format film. And, you know, it has this, like, very soft focus to it. It starts to break apart on the edges, like in the corners of the frame. Like, and it had just like this really dreamlike quality about it, and I was really attracted to that for whatever reason, and also because of the low tech nature of a plastic camera, it was something like I could go out. It's like instant cameras, right? Like it's just something I could go out and do and just kind of think about an image, right? And think about composing an image or just kind of. And, you know, that really just started me looking at the world, I think, with an artist's eye, like that time period.
What would I see in those photographs? What captured your imagination?
So at first, I was kind of following her lead, and at the time, I really liked this series of children's images she had done. So I did a lot of, you know, pictures with kids around my neighborhood. As kind of time went on a little bit, I started to turn that more toward street photography, a little bit to architecture. And later on, I really started looking at signs a lot, particularly within the neighborhood of Third Ward here in Houston.
Do you have much of what you did when you were young?
It'll take me a little while because I saved my book of negatives, but I have to hunt it down. So it might take me a little bit, but I still do have some images, yeah.
I mean, it would be really interesting to look at them now in the context of what you're doing and
the whole
trajectory of your career. I mean, do you have occasion to go and revisit older work anyway?
So, you know, I'm doing a show here in 2021 at Blaffer Gallery.
Right.
And that'll be the first time I've ever, you know, like all the, some of the older works will be presented alongside some of the newer pieces. So that'll be my really first time doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got to take me beyond that point. I'm really interested in how your artistry evolved and what are the key elements that distinguishes you as an artist, because we're not near there yet.
Yeah.
So photography, wow, I didn't know about that. That's fascinating.
I think
but you were looking at, were you, at that time, were you still looking in magazines and looking at imagery? And
I would say, yeah, like that's always kind of been,
mm-hmm.
always looking out for things, always kind of, you know, whether it be record covers or like, yeah, magazines or, yeah, just kind of always kind of having my eye open for interesting images, which... You know, so I went to undergrad in a photography program, but by that time I really I wasn't interested in taking pictures as much as I was interested in working with imagery, right? And so I spent like the last 2 years in undergraduate school, like, you know, scanning and kind of collecting images and kind of like archiving images, and you know, I think a lot of that approach stayed with me, you know, probably to this day. Although images are not, I think there's a lot of translation of images in my work that happens now, but still this thing about like archiving and collecting, I think, started at that time.
And did the images broaden? I mean, obviously there was a social content to some of the images. When did it begin to turn towards politics?
So,
or was it always sort of there?
It wasn't always, well, so the first art program that I was a part of in terms of like college, mm-hmm. was a school in Houston called Texas Southern University. And their art program was started by this guy named John Biggers, Dr. John Biggers. And he had a very... kind of like social consciousness. It wasn't political. It was more like it had to deal with changing African Americans' attitudes toward Africa, right? And you'll see some of his work is very beautiful. He's primarily a painter, but also did sculpture. He's also another kind of regional Texas artist. Really saw his mission, to try to bridge the connection between, which he saw as being severed and cut off, between Africa and North America, right, Africa and the United States. So that was the first college experience I had, and that was extremely important because in high school I didn't get much of an orientation about like Black contribution towards art history. And so when I got, you know, when I came to my first year in college, or is it my second year in college, I just kind of like soaked all of that up. And part of, from that point on, like part of my art making purpose was to also kind of educate myself about this thing, right? Which, you know, I kind of felt as absent within myself, right? Kind of awareness of history, awareness of, you know, politics, and I think that's where all of that starts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you were aware of the void of what you didn't know, and that became your mission. Mission to fill in those blanks.
And it's interesting because part of that, like I was just fortunate to come along at a time in which, you know, there was also that kind of those kind of messages and part of popular culture,
mm-hmm.
like especially like with early hip hop music, like. That was also a part, you know, because we're generationally kind of going through similar things, right? And so that was also part of the message there. So it, you know, it kind of, yeah, it just led me down that path.
Well, it'd be so interesting to revisit some of those images and to see the development of the choice of imagery that you gravitated towards.
Yeah.
The growth of that would be really fascinating, right?
Yeah, I mean, it starts a lot. I don't have a lot of those early, those works, But a lot of that was really about the history of slavery, right? And
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of where I started.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time went on and I, you know, educated myself about that, it kind of went to the next big move. This next big shift was the late 60s, early 70s, right? Of course, there were things like in between, and there was kind of stuff like, but in terms of like, as parts of history that I made artwork about, the next big shift was the late 60s, early 70s.
So all the research, your drive, you know, you're so driven by research, sort of began to form as your practice at that time.
At that time, right.
Yeah, it continues.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to Penn, then what?
So when I got to Penn...
Where were you? I mean, where were you in your artistry by the time you got to Penn?
I was primarily, you know, doing a lot of collaging, appropriation of imagery, and some sculpture. And so the sculpture route was the one that I wanted to kind of... do most because I was really wanting this thing which was not flat but also had some kind of body to it, had some kind of other material energy to it, and so
was it
that,
mixed media?
It was. So when I was an undergrad, I started doing mixed media stuff, right? But I was still kind of under the. I was under this photography program, so like, you know, the resources that I had in hand didn't allow me to push that too far,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I was doing some mixed media then, but by the time I got into to graduate school, I had kind of a year to work on my own and kind of do my own stuff, and yeah, it was mainly mixed media work.
Where was drawing in all of this? Where did that fit into your practice?
Drawing didn't come about until, I mean, you know, like as a serious thing that I wanted to pursue, like it didn't come about until like the first year in graduate school. Of course, I had to take drawing classes, so I would do that, but, and I would kind of doodle in my sketchbook and that kind of stuff, but I was... you know, I was at the time working with this artist collective named Oda Binga Jones and Associates. And within that artist collective, we had two people who were really great draftsmen. One's name is Dawoodu Jabari Anderson, and the other's name is Robert Pruitt. And so I kind of felt like, you know, like that's their thing, and I don't really want to kind of deal with that too much. And so I didn't go in that direction, although I did draw a little bit. But by the time I got into my first year of graduate school, I started to figure out other ways of drawing, and these ways would be, these were more so related to performance in a way, right? Or like also allowed, I guess it was just, it was related to process art, right? And in a way, like it's also connected to that particular kind of drawing technique I started to work with then is related to photography, is related to printmaking. And
can you tell me a little bit more about that so I have an idea what it is?
Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. So like those drawings that you have, what I would do is I, you know, as I said, I was collecting images all the time. And so once I found an image that I thought would translate well into a drawing, I would blow it up onto paper, like an oversized printer onto paper. And then I would cut the image out, right, in terms of, you know, like the background out, and I'll just have like the positive kind of shape would still be on the paper. and it would be like a stencil or kind of like, yeah, mainly like a stencil. I would put that stencil down onto a sheet of paper, and I would shake graphite powder on top of it. And then I have this kind of series of brooms, some that are like, some are regular, just kind of, corn brooms, and then some are softer brooms. And I would work the graphite powder into the paper using a different array of brooms. And that would give me kind of different tones. Sometimes it would give me strong lines. And one of the things that I really liked about it is that it left the trace of this motion, same way that drawing with your hand does, but it was in a different way, right?
Well, it probably emulated those photographs you're talking about, with that fuzzy kind of.
Yeah, it was very, like, some of the, like the ones, I think a couple of ones you have, I would definitely say, are kind of like the optics of a Diana photograph. They're very soft. Yeah.
At least it maybe references that kind of surface.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And so, and the thing is, like, you know, I could do those very quickly, and I could also do them, the process allows other random things to come into it. You know, like things that I didn't imagine, or like maybe a buildup of charcoal, or like, you know, yeah, just so it had a level of.
So there was a surprise element in it.
A surprise element, kind of improvisation aspect to it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
I like that word, improvisation. Good. And then, so then you're, but in the context of those, you were starting to redact information or reference redacted information.
Right.
So there's that's the missing piece, that's the historical, that's the hidden information.
Mm-hmm. So I had the process, but I at the same time, like, so those early drawings were, they were just, the earliest ones are me mainly sweeping graphite powder across a page, a large piece of paper, but based on my history and based off like how I kind of use art making, I wanted something else out of the imagery, and that's when somewhere it I remembered, you know, seeing these FBI memorandums or like, yeah, and so those
police
I felt,
blotters, police reports, right? Yeah.
Well, they're primarily created by the FBI, and these are different. These are different figures that they've been investigating.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was all happening when you were at Penn.
That was all happening when I was at Penn.
Okay.
Yeah.
When, if you think about your career thus far, what would you say was the breakout moment for you?
Breakout moment for me?
In terms of your artistry.
Yeah. I mean, the breakout moment was definitely at the end, right? It's hard to say because I think about these other experiences I had before, and they are very important, but in regards to all of that coming together, that was at Penn.
At Penn.
Right. And I think...
You found this method of drawing that suited you. Collage was a part of it, I assume?
Yeah, collage is a part of it. Performance is a part of it. And then, you know, some of the sculptures that I started create at that time, too, like... I think it had to deal more so with the kind of like instruction and what I was learning from Terry Atkins had a lot to do with really kind of taking me to the next steps in my understanding about art making.
Mm-hmm.
you know, which is not a theoretical thing, like, which is more so of a, I would honestly like say like a spiritual kind of thing, which I'm not exactly sure how to talk about, but it's mainly about trusting in yourself and knowing just the kind of the path of a creative person, you know, the tradition that you're also a part of, as well as the kind of importance of what you're doing could have, right? Which, you know, as I said, was kind of things that had been taught to me since that second year in undergrad, you know, but which were coming back around in a more full and more kind of complete way.
Sounds like he basically gave you permission to trust your instincts, believe in yourself.
I would say that, yeah. I would say that, and that, you know, as an artist, like, that's a very hard thing to do, and I still kind of struggle with that, you know, but that is part and parcel of an artist finding their own voice.
And part of that also is allowing yourself to experiment, to keep pushing, making mistakes, learning from mistakes, right?
Yeah, I totally agree.
I ask this question often because I'm very curious. When you're in your mode doing your typical day in the studio, where it can be intense, you're very focused, you're very driven, where do you allow yourself relief to just let go and mess around? And I think of it as play. Some people don't like that word too much, but where in your practice do you allow yourself to just let go and experiment?
So, I mean, I feel like that is when I'm starting to find out about maybe a new path, like within my work, you know. So a lot of my work is kind of in series, and the experimental kind of play stage happens at the really beginning of that series. Right. And it happens in other times later on, but it's a little more controlled then, right? Like, that's more about me then trying to direct my actions more toward where I have a vision of them going. But I think very early on, when I first start doing these things, it's about seeing what the material kind of can do or wants to do and what I have the capability of doing, right, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, tools or technology or patience or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, that's probably the play phase of my practice, experimental.
Do you keep journals or notebooks or...?
I do keep journals and notebooks, and I do keep those. So I don't know if you've seen Jack Whitten's his journals, like, I think, like, since the 1960s. I think it's called something about the woodshed. I don't do it to that extent. Right, but I just kind of write down little notes or kind of like little drawings or, like, you know, I should do that better. Yeah, but, like, yeah, just kind of loosely.
And is it regimented in any way? Do you do it in the same kind of portfolio, same kind of paper or book? Do you do it at the same time of the day? I mean, how does it occur?
It's not regimented, no.
Mm-hmm.
No. Do you think that's maybe a more...
No, I'm just... Everybody... I look to make sure it's happening.
Uh-huh.
Because I think it's important to maximizing artistic capacity.
Yeah.
Putting pen to paper in some fashion. Doesn't matter. I mean, I go into studios and some people have stacks of paper just piled high with doodles. Thinking, you know, ideas. Some people, I met one guy, artist, who had, his uncle had given him Hermes notebook, And he still had it with all the refills and very organized into these boxes. You know, so everybody's different. It doesn't matter. It's the idea of putting your hand to paper and letting all these things in your mind come out.
Yeah.
Because you've got stuff in there you don't even know that's there. So what's important is that you are doing it. And I think, I mean, do you... You keep all of these, I assume.
I do keep them, yeah.
And do you have occasion to go back and look at them ever?
I do. I do every once in a while.
And what happens when you do that?
So I'm just thinking about the one, the oldest one I have is from, I think this was like late 90s. And at that time period, I was a lot about playing with language. So it kind of just helps me to remember some of the things that I had been, you know, obsessed with or kind of, you know, other kind of stages I had gone through to get to where I am now. And it kind of, in a way, you know, reintroduces that to my practice in a way, you know, kind of going back to those journals.
Sure.
I
mean, sometimes those things just need time to take seed.
That's true.
You know, I mean, yeah. You know, you'll go back and you'll see something that suddenly is pertinent in your work today, but the idea was there 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, there, one thing that I kind of really thought from looking at that particular journal is like my attitude about it had changed a lot. Like it was more, it was more like there are more humorous elements in it, which I don't think humor is much a part of my work now, as being, you know, and that could have been because of my age or just could have been because of the moment. I don't know. That's just one of the things I kind of recognized as well.
Mm-hmm.
How the tone had changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk about residencies.
Hmm.
I assume you've done a number of them.
I say I've done about four.
And how do you view residencies? What do you think the value is in doing residencies?
So I'm trying to think of they're all the ones that I've done kind of have their own qualities to them and their own kind of development for me. Skowhegan was mainly about, you know, being around, you know, what I would consider like to be these great artists or like these, you know, very innovative young artists and understanding that, you know, I had something to contribute to that as well. So for me, Skowhegan was, it was a focus time of, you know, for me to work, but also it was a nice thing in terms of self-esteem, right? After I did that, I did a printmaking residency in London with that was at the time run by this photographer named Ingrid Pollard, and that was my first long stretch out of the U.S. So I was there for like 2 to 3 weeks, and that was, I think, a year after Skowhegan. And that really kind of helped me to understand or to see, like, the difference between, like, Black American culture and Black cultures in other parts of the world, right, and how there may be similar experiences, but, you know, the takes, the understanding around them or, like, the way to talk about them were very different.
Even the feeling, I imagine.
Yeah. And I'm just starting to understand that a little bit more now, like why that is. But that was the first time I was really exposed to those ideas. And you know, like not just read them in a book, right, but like really kind of get to feel them and experience them.
Be familiar with them, right?
Yeah.
Firsthand. Had you done any printmaking prior to that?
I had done a little bit of printmaking in high school and a little bit in college.
So you come away from that, see, and you gained insights or awareness of your blackness in a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
You come away with, obviously, some new skills with printmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? You come home.
And so that, after I leave that, then that takes me directly into graduate school. So that was at the summer of 2006. And I really, like, fly from London to Philadelphia to then start studying with Terry.
And a whole new toolbox, right?
But a whole new toolbox. I mean, yeah. In which I would say is was more poetic.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like so. That's
I hear that.
Yeah, which is much more poetic, and so I could. I kind of felt like, yeah, like to get away or pull back from direct imagery and to kind of bring these other ideas. You know, whether you talk about the sea or the tar, yeah, like bring these other elements into the discussion, and so that's yeah. That's what I left London with and came to Philadelphia. And, that did have a really large, I think, has had a big effect on my work as well.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip ahead because there's other things I want to cover. I mean, we could talk about these transitions, this trajectory of your artistry for hours. Mm-hmm. But there's other things I want to get to because – and maybe this is the segue, because you've gone from that residency around grad school, and now here you are how many years later, and you've received these two prizes, and you've gone off into the world with a specific purpose, with a certain freedom to further explore and stretch that very moment you just described to me. And I want you to talk about that.
Yeah. So I guess like where am I at now with that?
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Right now with my work, I think it's an interesting moment because, you know, because of what the country's going through. One.
Of course.
Yeah.
It makes it all that much more poignant, doesn't it?
It makes it all that much more poignant. You know, people, one of the main criticisms that, you know, I would get from people in terms of the subject matter of my work is like, why don't you do anything about the present? You know, or what do you have to say about the present? You know, and I think these kind of moments show us like that you know, history was always with us. You know, we weren't outrunning history. We weren't getting away from it. And it perhaps, you know, had some instruction for us if we were to listen, you know, and so now is an interesting, yeah, like an interesting time. And one of the things that I'm trying to focus on in my work and trying to understand better, you know, because it was such a formative force for me in my own kind of artistic development and then kind of consciousness raising, is the effect of popular culture, right? And so I'm looking more now into, I guess you would say, elements of radical politics or progressive politics that then get brought into popular culture and used to sell items or used to, you know, extend whatever kind of commercial agenda and the effect that that has on those movements, right? Because, you know, really it's about, like, how do you extend, in terms of success, I think it's about, like, how do you extend moments like this, right, to where people can achieve, you know, people can achieve change in a society and on whatever level that's possible, you know. And so that's where I'm at now. I'm also, you know, interested in that because it is a group of people, you know, thinking through these ideas, and not like solitary academics. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, these are basically images and groups of, you know, examples of text or whatever that massive amounts of people get to see and try to understand. I don't have any examples to show you, but if you think about, like, for instance, the, you know, the work that you have, the Richard Wright piece, you know, one of the fears about Richard Wright was, you know, his ability to write so eloquently and to embed all of these politics within his work, right, and to reach these massive groups of people, right? And a lot of the figures who I look at now through the documents also had that same capability, right? But once you get to, like, the late 60s, early 70s, you know, there is an embrace of some of those concepts, those ideas within parts of popular culture, even within advertising, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for, you know, those movements and, like, why? And, you know, like, so those are the kind of things that I'm asking right now with the work and trying to understand through what I'm doing. And
talk
I'm not doing
about,
it as academic. You know, I'm doing
right.
it as a creative person. So it's yeah.
Well, I think it's a hard question you ask.
It's a complex question
for sure. Talk to me about this notion of cultures blending, becoming more abstract.
So, in regards to the trip that I was doing, in, you know, with the BMW art journey, like that,
mm-hmm.
is what was. That is, I guess, like the theme that brings all of those cultures together is just like this syncretic nature of once, you know, Africans left, you know, this part of West Africa or, you know, this part of Africa and traveled to other parts of Europe or South America, Caribbean, or North America, they came into contact with these different cultures. And part of their survival then was based on, you know, how well they negotiated and accommodated those cultures to within what they knew, right? And for me, I think at least being, I mostly, you know, think about that through music. And for me, these kind of, these conglomerations of cultures produce even more kind of strong and viral forms, right, that are able to speak to larger audiences and are able to communicate across larger groups of people, as well as kind of are innovative in their own right,
mm-hmm.
right, because they these are the first time, these perhaps the first time these things have been brought together like this. So for me, like that, it has been an important, like thinking about those, like or trying to mix these different cultures together has been a way forward, but it's also been a way of really thinking about my Americanness, right?
It's another layer, too, of the question.
Mm-hmm.
of the complexity, correct?
And the question about the about how cultures come
well,
together.
When you were talking about the where you are now in your work.
Yeah.
And this is an aspect of that understanding. It's another layer, right? And of complexity.
Yeah, you could think about it as that as well. You know, I think about it through the so do you know this book, Michelle Alexander, The New Jim Crow?
No.
So she basically talks about...
is that the title of the book, The New Jim Crow?
Yeah, The New Jim Crow.
Okay.
And she's mainly talking about the prison industry, but she's also talking mm-hmm. about the maneuvers of the American kind of slave system to basically, like, prevent change within the society, right? So you, mm-hmm. yeah. And so when I think about those things in terms of popular culture and like mass media, I think about it more through that lens,
kind of
like that force trying to outmaneuver these.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're right. It is, it at the same time, it is potentially about that as well, you know, and that's a really interesting thing in regards to the capabilities of these musicians. And it does kind of tell you why, you know, Billie Holiday would end up with an FBI file, or why Duke Ellington might end up with an FBI file, or even Elvis Presley, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is about the potential of that melding,
mm-hmm.
right?
The blending,
which is ultimately what, you know, which is definitely a source of fear, right?
For sure, because it's not so overt.
Right, right, and it's much more subtle, and it
and
still has
more frightening.
Yeah, changing people's mm-hmm. minds. Yeah.
Congratulations on the museum acquisitions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You must be very pleased to be in the Manila.
I was, yeah. You know, I've been going to the Manila since high school, and so that's actually like one of my favorite museums.
Oh, mine too. But
yeah. So I'm really excited about the internet.
How many pieces were chosen?
One piece was chosen. Which was
with another one.
MLK piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought there was for some reason I thought I saw another one that was selected as well.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you've got hopefully you'll have this show coming up in 2021.
I know, hopefully.
Have you started conceptualizing it or working with the curator?
We started talking about it. The curator's name is Stephen Maticio. And I'm very excited about doing it. He's great. This will be the first catalog of my work. You know, that's been made. So.
It's a lot, but it's going to be so meaningful for you just to even go through the process,
let alone
what the exhibit itself will reveal. But it's going to be another one of those pivotal moments for you, no doubt.
I've been thinking about maybe trying to. And not go back to teaching in the fall, but I don't know. It's such a crazy time. Like
you were saying that to me in New York when we talked. You were thinking about taking some. Actually, you were looking forward to taking time off to have more time in your studio.
Right. I know, but now like all this has happened, and it's just I don't
and
know.
You can't you can't determine how do you make those determinations.
Yeah. You know, I was basically, so after the show and, I had a decent amount of money saved. And so that was going to afford me to take some time off. But now it's like, maybe I should hold on to that and kind of, you know, just sit it out, you know, just be in there one more year and
mm-hmm.
see what happens after that.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's such an uncertain time.
Well, certainly is a more secure approach, right?
Yeah. Which maybe is not always the way to go, right?
I don't know. You'll figure it out, Jamal. You always do, it seems. But I promised you 45 minutes. God knows how long we've been talking here. But there's so much more. I still want to talk to you more about the front and back thing that we talked about when I saw you in Houston, because that still plays on my mind, this fascination you have, concern with everything you've produced about the front and the back. So one day we'll talk about that too.
And you know, it's like it's well worn now, but like, you know, the idea of double consciousness.
Yeah.
I wonder, is there anything in that, you know, that deals with the front and the back? But you're right. It's still an issue, but I haven't been thinking about it. But
well, I think it has to do with that whole thing about what's missing. What don't I know?
Yeah.
You know, because you want to know what's on the back, because maybe it's not all on the front.
That's right.
I mean, I think there's somehow some kind of metaphoric play going on there. But anyway, I find it interesting. I'm gonna part ways with you here. I could talk to you much longer, but you need to get on with your day, and I'm starving for lunch. I wish you a good summer with your family.
Thank you.
Lots of inspiration. I'm excited for what's ahead once we get through this terrible time.
Yeah.
And, you know, there certainly is so much going on right now in society with social justice, Black Lives Matter, that there's going to be an awful lot for you to really process and weigh, which will undoubtedly make its way to your work at some point in time when it's the right time.
Definitely. Definitely.
But I think you kind of have to live through it too, and not just react, right?
I agree with that. You know, it's been interesting. Actually, I deleted Instagram today. This morning, in fact. And I do think it is about that. It's about, like, being in the moment, experiencing this, taking all this into consideration, and processing it through the work, you
yep.
know. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I think we just have to really absorb and give time for things to weigh on us, to feel, to think, and to see them in a different context than in the frenzy of the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir. It's so good
thank
to speak with
them.
You. I wish we were doing this together, but we'll be in touch, and I wish you well.
I wish you well as also, and have a good summer.
Thank you.
And yeah.
Okay. Be well. Say hi to Carrie for me, won't you?
Okay, I will.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Right. There you are. Oh, gosh.